Ladies and gentlemen, the State of the Union 2024. You know what I think? You know what I think? I wear it on my sleeve proudly. I think we're in a pretty bad state. Welcome to the Trish Regan Show. I am Trish. We are waiting on the President of the United States. I hear they're going to like be taking an intermission tonight. That's interesting, huh? Maybe he can't make it the whole hour. We'll see. I'm actually a little bit worried about him. I saw the pictures he was tweeting out, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. And you've seen some of the things that have happened just recently. I've showed you. So I'm a little bit worried. Look, it's still the President of the United States. We don't want him to trip and fall. He's going to try and use this as, my prediction, an opportunity to really, really drill down on that class warfare stuff that he loves to talk about. He's going to really try and stick it to the so-called rich and say they need to pay their fair share. I mean, I just keep thinking to myself, wouldn't it be nice if Hunter Biden paid his fair share? Maybe even just decided to declare himself as a foreign lobbyist like he was and actually declare the income that he has coming in from overseas. But again, we're waiting on the President of the United States. He told us he'd be there at 9. You know, these things, you know, they take a little while and there's some pomp and circumstance and he walks in. Be interesting to see. Do you remember the State of the Union where Nancy Pelosi sat there with quite a face, right? And she wouldn't even applaud or acknowledge. It was like, I can't believe I'm here because this president, as she saw it, was not legitimate. Well, Donald Trump is already out. It didn't take him long to respond to any of this. He's already out, ladies and gentlemen, with his view of what the president's going to say. I want to share this with you as we wait on Mr. Biden.
Joe Biden is on the run from his record and lying like crazy to try and escape accountability for the horrific devastation he and his party have created. All the while, they continue the very policies that are causing this horror show to go. We cannot take it any longer as a country. Joe Biden's sad excuse for a State of the Union address aside, here are the facts. When I left office, we gave Joe Biden the most secure border in U.S. history. We gave him remain in Mexico, very tough to get, but I got it. Safe third agreements, the asylum ban, Title 42, 571 miles of border wall, rapid deportations, and much more. We had the safest border in the history of our country. As soon as he got in, Crooked Joe and his radical left lunatics deliberately dismantled each and every one of those policies that were so good that gave us this best border. According to Tom Homan, according to Brandon Judd, the top people, they said it was the single best border we've ever had in recorded history. What's happened now is a horror show. The country, our country, is being laughed at all over the world. Over the past 3 years, Biden has actively aided and abetted the importation of millions and millions of illegal alien migrants and resettled them into your communities. At any time during the past 3 years, Crooked Joe Biden, and he is crooked as you can be and the most incompetent president we've ever had, could have called off the invasion. But to this day, he is keeping the hordes of illegal migrants and illegal aliens pouring into the country. By the time his term is up, we can have close to 20 million people in our country. And we have no idea from where they come. We have no idea who they are. They have no identification. Many come from mental institutions. Many come from prisons. They're terrorists. We have a calamity the likes of which we've never seen before. The very first bill Joe Biden sent to Congress was a plan to turn illegal aliens into voting citizens. That's just what we need. No matter what Crooked Joe says, his actions prove his priority is to import a colossal new illegal alien population and let them all stay. My priority is securing our border and sending Crooked Joe's illegals back home. Likewise, the sight of a feeble Joe Biden talking about shrinkflation, the term he uses, is one of the most ridiculous things this country has ever seen. Shrinkflation is just another way of saying inflation. It means that you're losing a lot of money because these people don't know what they're doing. it was all caused by crooked Joe Biden and the people that surround him. And they are radical left Marxists and fascists and communists and socialists. We have people running our country, the likes of which we have never seen before. He and the communists and his party looted trillions of dollars from you and spent it on illegal aliens and the Green New Scam, triggering the highest inflation in many, many decades. If your packages are getting smaller, that's the reason why, under my leadership, there was no inflation. We had the greatest economy in the history of the world. It's time to tell crooked Joe Biden, you're fired.
Ta-da-da! You knew that was coming, right? His signature line, Donald Trump making it very clear how he feels about where we are right now. Understandably so. Look, ladies and gentlemen, we are not in a good place. I titled the name on this show as State of Disaster, because it really is a disaster that we are in right now. I don't know how anybody could look at what's going on and actually say that this is good stuff. And yet that's what you're going to hear, right? Because Joe Biden, he's living in some kind of la-la land, delusional land, where he wants to believe that there is no inflation. He wants to believe that there's totally world peace going on and that border thing's not a big deal. Listen, it's a big deal. And we learned that 320,000 migrants were flown into various cities across the United States without even the cities getting a heads up on this happening. Yeah, they didn't think it would go over so well. The Center for Immigration Studies revealing all of this. Just a massive, massive story. And when Biden and the rest of them try and say, oh, we're doing what we can on immigration, and really and truly, this is the fault of the Republicans, I want to show you this. Because this is candidate Biden in 2020 in the Democrat debate promising a surge at the border. He wanted this. He literally was calling for this. So don't let him tell you otherwise. Here we go.
There is, we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come. I would, in fact, make sure that there is,
we
immediately
have to
surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come. I would, in fact, make sure that there is, we immediately.
So, Joe, you got your wish. They came. I mean, I don't know what the official numbers are, but upwards of 7 million for sure. You heard Donald Trump say a number that's even far higher than that. His word is that by the time Joe Biden leaves office, that in fact will be the case. And I keep saying to myself, like, why would they do this? What is the practical reason for doing this? And then it hit me, actually, thanks to Elon Musk. Credit where credit is due. Elon tweeted out this morning that the way the census is geared and the way they run the Senate census, you get more congressional reps for more population centers. So it would make sense then that they would be putting these illegal undocumented migrants into states where they could then secure more congressional representatives. You see, this is like a new kind of gerrymandering, effectively. If you just pinpoint, okay, we're going to put some people here, we're going to put some people there, even if they can't vote yet, the fact that they're there, they are counted in the census, and therefore that state gains more representation, and so you're able to kind of stack the deck, so to speak, in that way. But it's clearly a problem when you look all over the nation right now, and we've got so many states, even in New York, struggling to deal with this. The governor of New York is now saying, okay, we're going to put all these security checks on subways, and she has to. I mean, that's the sort of like the whole group that was like, oh, we don't want police and we don't want law and order. Now they're like, oh, my gosh, we need law and order. So I don't know how Joe Biden, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be able to spin all that. I do have a feeling he'll go back to the well. So you're going to hear a lot of class warfare. You're going to hear a lot of racially tinged things. We heard something pretty pathetic just the other night on MSNBC where they were trying to paint all conservatives as, you know, I don't even want to say these words. I guess let them, as we wait for Joe Biden here, MSNBC just going after any Republican. So if you dare to be conservative at this point in time, you're at risk. I mean, this was just utterly wild. I want to play this for you because you need to understand effectively where they're really coming from. Outrageous.
Voters don't vote that way. They don't vote based on economics or based on the benefits they're getting economically from the president. They're increasingly, from the Tea Party on, they're voting on race. They're voting on this idea of an invasion of brown people over the border, the idea that they can't get whatever job they want. A black person got it, therefore drive all the blacks out of the colleges, get rid of DEI. That is what they're voting on. They're just voting specifically on racial animus. Which, at this stage, it isn't about economics.
No.
But really, Republican voters don't vote that way. They don't vote based on...
Headline, conservatives care about economics. You know what? Conservatives actually understand economics. Conservatives are often business owners. Conservatives can add and subtract. They're not into this new age math that's supposed to be equitable math. Because with equitable math, guess what? Nobody actually realizes we have a $43 trillion outstanding amount of debt. Right? Like that. Is that the method to the madness? We have equitable math, make everybody feel good about their math classes. Trust me, conservatives care about the economy first and foremost. I think conservatives are some of the most meritocracy-oriented people I know because they all want to make money. You know, this is Donald Trump. Like, I'll tell you one thing. He is a guy who wants to make money. He wants things to work well, which is why I love having somebody that comes from the business world. It's really actually pretty darn incredible and important to have that, let's be honest, right? Because without it, you're left with a bunch of socialists like Joe Biden, who we're waiting on right now, ladies and gentlemen, to give us the State of the Union. We're being told he's going to have to take some breaks. I get it. I mean, I get he's going to have to take some breaks because the stuff I've seen lately, it's not good. I mean, I keep saying, I hope he can make it. Like, I really, really, really do hope he can make it. I'm going to show you something that just came out just the other day, which actually has me legitimately worried for the guy. I mean, we can't have a president who really and truly is in this bad of shape. Here we go. Take a look at this and tell me if you're not worried about what's going to happen tonight.
I have a lot of questions. I better not start the questions. I'll get in trouble.
What's your message for Super Tuesday voters?
Everyone, please move this way.
Super Tuesday, say, do you have a message for voters?
Thanks, come on.
Thank you so much. Thank you all.
Look at this. Look at that. Really frightening, really.
I would, in fact, make really, sure really, that there really is, we immediately serve.
I mean, he does not look well. He does not look well to me. And that is a concern. I mean, this is, we're waiting right now. It was supposed to start at 9. We'll see. As I said, there's a little bit of pomp and circumstance that goes on ahead of time. I'm looking out of the corner of my eye at the State of the Union address that is going to begin, it says shortly, from the White House. So we'll go to that feed just as soon as we have it. But again, just to prepare you on what we're going to hear. For one thing, KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, was making the rounds on the morning TV shows, and she did go on to MSNBC where she said, oh my gosh, I don't even need to come here and talk because you guys did my job for me. I mean, like, she's admitting it, right? So State TV, doing the job for the White House. They want to say how great he is. I mean, we heard Joe Scarborough say he's just in a brilliant state of mind. This is crazy. I mean, I'm sorry, Joe, but you know what? I realize you have a bias. I realize you've got an audience that expects you to live up to something there. I mean, that's the beauty. By the way, if you haven't subscribed, make sure you subscribe, like, share, do all that kind of stuff. It is really, really important. But one of the things that really just makes me ill when I see it is the sycophants out there. And you got a ton of them over there on MSNBC. And it's like they just got the memo, right? The memo is, hey, we got to help this guy. We got to help this guy or else. And so Joe Scarborough is taking that to heart. Let me see if I can find this for you because it's utterly, totally insane and wild. And just, it had me kind of wondering, is he auditioning? Is he auditioning for some kind of gig as an actor? If so, you know what? He's not very good at it. I found it, and I got to show you this because you're going to be blown away. And I'm telling you, I don't think we're going to see a very cogent person there tonight on stage. I'm going to take a wild guess at that. But let's see. Here is here's Scarborough trying to tell us this is a really honest game president. See, the computer doesn't even want to play it for you. It's like, we can't watch that. We can't possibly watch that. It's good. We got to see it. If we can, we may not come through. In which case, you're going to have to go to my shorts feed because I'm putting it there because it's that good. And if you were watching yesterday's show, you did see it because I played it then too. I just can't believe that he would sit there and give that kind of spin for this president. Just a couple little factoids for you. You know, think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Since Joe Biden came into office, we've had 18% inflation. Okay, 18%. That's a lot. In fact, you got to go all the way back to the Carter years to see anything like it. And I also add this. You know what? They changed how they account for inflation in the late 80s. And they decided to strip housing costs out of it for whatever reason. We can have that debate another day. So it's not really an oranges to oranges comparison. In fact, I would say that a lot of the inflation that is there because rents are up better than 20%, mortgages are up better than 66% since Joe Biden came into office. The reality is, if you really were to go back and you look at how they measured inflation in the 70s, and you look at how they measure inflation now, it's so much worse. It is absolutely bad. I mean, it is so, I used to say, and you know, I see so many familiar faces here. Leslie, I remember you and I talking about this, at least on these chats here, in this show, that, you know, hey, maybe it was like 16% inflation. That was when we were looking at what, 9% in change. Really, those numbers were like 16%. Well, let's talk about collective inflation, because when he came into office and you move forward till now, he's like, oh, inflation's coming down. It's coming down. Well, you know, maybe it came down a little bit from the massive high you sent it to, Joe, but you sent it to a massive high. So that's what we're dealing with. We have 18% inflation right now since Joe came into office. And guess what? Wages are only up 15.4%. So they're not keeping pace with inflation. And then when you look at the cost of everything, oh my goodness, from eggs to other kinds of groceries to gas prices to travel, you name it, the cost of everything is through the roof. Right, so if costs are so high and people are only making 15.3% more than they were making before, and that's, you know, then I don't know how it works there. I don't think that is a system that's really going to benefit most Americans, as you're about to tell us tonight. I know. Get ready to be nauseated. But you know, it's really important that we see all sides. It's why I try and bring you all the stuff from The View and from Morning Joe and from Rachel Maddow and the rest of them. I mean, it's important that you understand where they're coming from. You have to understand and be able to cut through this BS and this bias. And it's gotten to the point where I think it's actually relatively easy because it's so ridiculous. But then again, I mean, it's a matter of, can we get through? All the more reason, subscribe, guys. Make sure that you do that for me. It's really important right now that you subscribe and that you hit the bell. If you're watching on YouTube, do that because I want you to know when I'm here. Look, I couldn't have predicted that it would go this bad. I did say in 2020, if you were elected, the problem we'd have is that the guy really didn't have an appreciation or understanding of policy. He's a politician. I mean, that's why he's been there 50 years. Let's face it. He's not a policy guy. I don't think he's a very smart guy. Graduated the bottom of his law school class, right, from Syracuse, even though he tries to say otherwise. He's adept at lying, which is what we're going to hear some of tonight. He's adept at, you know, hanging out and being one of the politicos, although it's becoming more difficult lately. One, because of his age, and two, because his party is changing a lot, right? They're getting lefty, and they're getting really extremist. And so that's, you know, cutting into his ability perhaps to have as many friends. It seems his son is, to a certain extent, albeit not politics followed in his footsteps, having the friends all around the world. These are just allegations, of course. We're going to be very, very careful because they get very sensitive when you talk about Hunter Biden. But Hunter Biden, I believe, only had that job at Burisma in Ukraine to the tune of $83,000 a month because of who his father was at the time, the vice president in charge of our relationship with Ukraine. He had to keep going back and forth over and over and over again to Ukraine. And it turns out the company that his son worked for, again, $83,000 a month, you don't get paid that for a whole year for most board jobs, any board job. I've never even heard of a board job that pays that much for a whole year, and this is per month. And it was times two because his partner, Devin Archer, was collecting that $83,000 as well. So it's just not even heard of. Like something else was going on. And it turns out this was most likely protection money of some sort. Well, that protection money was in part because the prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, was circling around Burisma and saying, you guys are a corrupt company and trying to put them out of business. And so what did Joe do? Oh, he went over there and said, you can't do that. No, 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 you can't do that, you see, because if you do, we're going to withhold our funding here. And we had a lot of funding at that time. We just found out the other day, actually, that the CIA has had a big op going on there since 2014, since the Maidan Revolution. And so all that money that we would be putting into Ukraine, he said, could be threatened. And so he was very proud of saying, well, you know, that prosecutor got fired. That prosecutor got fired, and therefore, I guess, his son got to collect another $83,000. And never declared this stuff. I mean, wasn't even paying his taxes, wasn't even registering as a foreign lobbyist. That is truly remarkable, unbelievable, unethical to me. And perhaps if this cover-up that he engaged in turns out to be some there, it could be indeed very problematic, certainly for the son. I don't know, but I believe it should be for Biden. We'll see what they're able to prove on that one. Amazing. In this kind of world, that no matter what happens, if you're on the wrong side of something, trouble can ensue. Let me take a look here. We can go over and see them. He's making his way through the floor, and like I said, I'm nervous for him. I'm really, really nervous for him because I'm not convinced that Joe Biden is really going to be able to pull this off tonight. But you see him shaking hands. You got everybody in government there. You got the Congress, you got the Senate, and they're there to wish him well. Again, Joe Biden, they're going to be speaking momentarily for the 2024 State of the Union. So prepare yourself. Prepare yourself. And like I said, I believe we're going to be having an interview. Is anybody like holding him up? I've lost sight of him here in the crowd. I'm going to be with you here through the whole thing, and we can chat on our chat. But again, I see Bernie Sanders. Okay, big night for Bernie Sanders. You see Mike Johnson up there. I have a feeling Mike Johnson will not be as crass as Nancy Pelosi. Do you agree with me on that? I just think that he's going to be a more stand-up player. That's a funny thing here. Like the Republicans, they kind of play by the rules and do the right things. And not so on the other side. Okay, Kamala leading the applause, ladies and gentlemen. Kamala there leading the applause as he comes to, okay, no guardrails, that's good. He says hi to Mike. He's got his notes, he's been preparing. Question is, can he read the teleprompter? Can he stand for this long? These are fair considerations. Are they not?
Tony!
Some big applause, as there should be. Again, he's the President of the United States, and we all love our country.
Here's a Jill.
Oh, lots of applause. They're just happy he made it to the podium.
Good evening. Good evening. If I were smart, I'd go home now.
If I were smart, I'd go home now. Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, Madam Vice President, members of Congress, my fellow Americans, in January 1941, Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation, and he said, "I address you at a moment unprecedented in the history of the Union. Hitler was on the march. War was raging in Europe. President Roosevelt's purpose was to wake up Congress and alert the American people that this was no ordinary time. Freedom and democracy were under assault in the world. Tonight, I come to this same chamber to address the nation. Now, it's we who face an unprecedented moment in the history of the Union. And yes, my purpose tonight is to wake up the Congress and alert the American people that this is no ordinary moment either. Not since President Lincoln and the Civil War have freedom and democracy been under assault at home as they are today. What makes our moment rare is that freedom and democracy are under attack at both at home and overseas at the very same time. Overseas, Putin of Russia is on the march, invading Ukraine and sowing chaos throughout Europe and beyond. If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not. But Ukraine can stop Putin. Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that it needs to defend itself. That is all. That is all Ukraine is asking. They're not asking for American soldiers. In fact, there are no American soldiers at war in Ukraine, and I'm determined to keep it that way. But now, assistance to Ukraine is being blocked by those who want to walk away from our world leadership. It wasn't long ago when a Republican president named Ronald Reagan thundered, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." Now, my predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, "Do whatever the hell you want." That's a quote. A former president actually said that, bowing down to a Russian leader. I think it's outrageous, it's dangerous, and it's unacceptable. As a founding member of NATO, the military alliance of democratic nations created after World War II to prevent war and keep the peace. And today, we've made NATO stronger than ever. We welcomed Finland to the alliance last year. And just this morning, Sweden officially joined, and their minister is here tonight. We're going to stand up. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And they know how to fight. Mr. Prime Minister, welcome to NATO, the strongest military alliance the world has ever seen. I say this to Congress. We have to stand up to Putin. Send me a bipartisan national security bill. History is literally watching. History is watching. If the United States walks away, it will put Ukraine at risk. Europe is at risk. The free world will be at risk, emboldening others to do what they wish to do us harm. My message to President Putin, who I've known for a long time, is simple. We will not walk away. We will not bow down. I will not bow down. In a literal sense, history is watching. History is watching. Just like history watched 3 years ago on January 6th. When insurrectionists stormed this very Capitol and placed a dagger to the throat of American democracy. Many of you are here on that darkest of days. We all saw with our own eyes the insurrectionists were not patriots. They'd come to stop the peaceful transfer of power, to overturn the will of the people. January 6th lies about the 2020 election and the plots to steal the election posed a great, gravest threat to U.S. democracy since the Civil War. But they failed. America stood. America stood strong, and democracy prevailed. We must be honest. The threat to democracy must be defended. My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that. This is the moment to speak the truth and to bury the lies. Here's the simple truth. You can't love your country only when you win. Ever since being elected to office, I ask all of you, without regard to party, to join together and defend democracy. Remember, your oath of office is defending us all threats, foreign and domestic. Respect free and fair elections. Restore trust in our institutions. And make clear political violence has absolutely no place, no place in America, zero place. Again, it's not hyperbole to suggest history is watching. We're watching. Your children and grandchildren will read about this day and what we do. History is watching another assault on freedom. Joining us tonight is Latoya Beasley, a social worker from Birmingham, Alabama. 14 months ago, she and her husband welcomed a baby girl thanks to the miracle of IVF. She scheduled treatments to have that second child, but the Alabama Supreme Court shut down IVF treatments across the state, unleashed by a Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. She was told her dream would have to wait. What her family had got through should never have happened. Unless Congress acts, it could happen again. So tonight, let's stand up for families like hers. To my friends across the aisle, don't keep this waiting any longer. Guarantee the right to IVF. Guarantee it nationwide. Like most Americans, I believe Roe v. Wade got it right. I thank Vice President Harris for being an incredible leader defending reproductive freedom and so much more. My predecessor came to office determined to see Roe v. Wade overturned. He's the reason it was overturned, and he brags about it. Look at the chaos that has resulted. Joining us tonight is Kate Cox, the wife and mother from Dallas. She's become pregnant again and had a fetus of a fatal condition. Her doctor told Kate that her own life and her ability to have children in the future were at risk if she didn't act. Because Texas law banned her ability to act, Kate and her husband had to leave the state to get what she needed. What her family got through should have never happened as well, but it's happening in too many others. There are state laws banning the freedom to choose, criminalizing doctors, forcing survivors of rape and incest to leave their states to get the treatment they need. Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. My God, what freedom else would you take away? Look, it's a decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court majority wrote the following, and with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral power. electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you were right about that. Clearly. Clearly. Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women. But they found out when reproductive freedom was on the ballot, we won in 2022 and 2020, and we'll win again in 2024. If you, the American people, send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, I promise you, I'll restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again. Folks, America cannot go back. I'm here tonight to show what I believe is the way forward, because I know how far we've come. 4 years ago, next week, before I came to office, the country was hit by the worst pandemic and the worst economic crisis in a century. Remember the fear, record losses. Remember the spikes in crime and the murder rate, raging virus that took more than 1 million American lives of loved ones, millions left behind. A mental health crisis of isolation and loneliness. A president, my predecessor, failed the most basic presidential duty that he owes to American people, the duty to care. I think that's unforgivable. I came to office determined to get us through one of the toughest periods in the nation's history. We have. It doesn't make news, but in 1,000 cities and towns, the American people are writing the greatest comeback story never told. So let's tell the story here. Tell it here and now. America's comeback is building the future of American possibilities, building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down, investing in all America, in all Americans, to make every sure everyone has a fair shot, and we leave no one behind. The pandemic no longer controls our lives. The vaccines that saved us from COVID are now being used to beat cancer, turning setback into comeback. That's what America does. That's what America does. Folks, my inherited economy is on the brink. Now our economy is literally the envy of the world. 15 million new jobs in just 3 years, a record, a record. Unemployment at 50-year lows. A record 16 million Americans are starting small businesses, and each one is a literal act of hope. With historic job growth and small business growth for Black and Hispanics and Asian Americans, 800,000 new manufacturing jobs in America and counting. Where is it written we can't be the manufacturing capital of the world? We are, we will. More people have health insurance today. More people have health insurance today than ever before. The racial wealth gap is as small as it's been in 20 years. Wages keep going up. Inflation keeps coming down. Inflation has dropped from 9% to 3%, the lowest in the world, and tending lower. The landing is and will be soft. And now, instead of importing foreign products and exporting American jobs, we're exporting American products and creating American jobs right here in America, where they belong. And it takes time, but the American people are beginning to feel it. Consumer studies show consumer confidence is soaring. Buy America has been the law of the land since the 1930s. Past administrations, including my predecessor, including some Democrats as well in the past, failed to buy American. Not anymore. On my watch, federal projects that you fund, like helping build American roads, bridges, and highways, will be made with American products and built by American workers. Creating good-paying American jobs. And thanks to our CHIPS and Science Act, the United States is investing more in research and development than ever before. During the pandemic, a shortage of semiconductors, chips, that drove up the price of everything from cell phones to automobiles. And by the way, we invented those chips right here in America. Well, instead of having to import them, private companies are now investing billions of dollars to build new chip factories here in America, creating tens of thousands of jobs. Many of those jobs paying $100,000 a year and don't require a college degree. In fact, my policies have attracted $650 billion in private sector investment in clean energy, advanced manufacturing, creating tens of thousands of jobs here in America. And thanks to our bipartisan infrastructure law, 46,000 new projects have been announced all across your communities. And by the way, I noticed some of you strongly voted against it, or they're cheering on that money coming in. I like it. I'm with you. And if any of you don't want that money in your district, just let me know. Modernizing our roads and bridges, ports and airports, public transit systems. Removing poisonous lead pipes so every child can drink clean water without risk of brain damage. Providing affordable high-speed internet for every American, no matter where you live, urban, suburban, or rural communities, in red states and blue states. Record investments in tribal communities. Because of my investment in a family farm, because I invested in a family farm led by my Secretary of Agriculture, who knows more about this than anybody I know, we're better able to stay in the family for those farms and their children and grandchildren won't have to leave home to make a living. It's transformative. The great comeback story is Belvidere, Illinois, home to an auto plant for nearly 60 years. Before I came to office, the plant was on its way to shutting down. Thousands of workers feared for their livelihoods. Hope was fading. Then I was elected to office, and we raised the Belvidere repeatedly with auto companies, knowing unions would make all the difference. The UAW worked like hell to keep the plant open and get these jobs back, and together we succeeded. Instead of auto factories shutting down, auto factories reopening, a new state-of-the-art battery factory is being built to power those cars there at the same. The folks of Belvidere, I say, instead of your town being left behind, your community is moving forward again. Because instead of watching auto jobs of the future go overseas, 4,000 union jobs with higher wages are building the future in Belvidere right here in America. Here tonight is UAW President Sean Fain, a great friend and a great labor leader. Sean, where are you? Stand up. And Dawn Sims, a third-generation worker, UAW worker at Belvidere. Sean, I was proud to be the first president to stand on the picket line. And today, Dawn has a good job in her hometown, providing stability for her family and pride and dignity as well. Showing once again, Wall Street didn't build America. They're not bad guys. They didn't build it, though. The middle class built the country, and unions built the middle class. I say to the American people, when America gets knocked down, we get back up. We keep going. That's America. That's you, the American people. It's because of you America's coming back. It's because of you our future is bright. It's because of you that tonight we can proudly say the state of our union is strong and getting stronger. Tonight, I want to talk about the future of possibilities that we can build together. A future where the days of trickle-down economics are over and the wealthy and the biggest corporations no longer get all the tax breaks. And by the way, I understand corporations. I come from a state that has more corporations invested than every one of your states in the state of the United States combined. And I represented for 36 years. I'm not anti-corporation, but I grew up in a home where trickle-down economics didn't put much on my dad's kitchen table. That's why I determined to turn things around so middle class does well. When they do well, the poor have a way up and the wealthy still do very well. We all do well. And there's more to do to make sure you're feeling the benefits of all we're doing. Americans pay more for prescription drugs than anywhere in the world. It's wrong, and I'm ending it. With a law that I proposed and signed, not one of you Republican buddies voted for it, we finally beat Big Pharma. Instead of paying $400 a month or thereabouts for insulin with diabetes, and it only costs 10 bucks to make, they only get paid 35 a month now and still make a healthy profit. And I want to — but what to do next? I want to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for every American who needs it. Everyone. For years, people have talked about it, but finally we got it done and gave Medicare the power to negotiate lower prices on prescription drugs, just like the VA is able to do for veterans. That's not just saving seniors money. It's saving taxpayers money. We cut the federal deficit by $160 billion. Because Medicare will no longer have to pay those exorbitant prices to Big Pharma. This year, Medicare is negotiating lower prices for some of the costliest drugs on the market to treat everything from heart disease to arthritis. It's now time to go further and give Medicare the power to negotiate lower prices for 500 different drugs over the next decade. They're making a lot of money, guys. And they'll still be extremely profitable. It'll not only save lives, it will save taxpayers another $200 billion. Starting next year, the same law caps total prescription drug costs for seniors on Medicare at $2,000 a year. Even for expensive cancer drugs, it costs $10,000, $12,000, $15,000. Now I want to cap prescription drug costs at $2,000 a year for everyone. Yeah. Folks, I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but if you want to get an Air Force One and fly to Toronto, Berlin, Moscow, even Moscow, probably. And bring your prescription with you, and I promise you I'll get it for you for 40% the cost you're paying now. Same company, same drug, same place. Folks, the Affordable Care Act, the old Obamacare, is still a very big deal. Over 100 million of you can no longer be denied health insurance because of pre-existing condition. But my predecessor and many in this chamber want to take this prescription drug away by repealing the Affordable Care Act. I'm not going to let that happen. We stopped you 50 times before and we'll stop you again. In fact, I'm not only protecting it, I'm expanding it. The enacted tax credits of $800 per person per year reduce health care costs for millions of working families. That tax credit expires next year. I want to make that savings permanent. To state the obvious, women are more than half our population, but research on women's health has always been underfunded. That's why we're launching the first-ever White House initiative on women's health research, led by Jill, doing an incredible job as First Lady. Surpass my plan for $12 billion to transfer women's health research and benefit millions of lives all across America. I know the cost of housing is so important to you. If inflation keeps coming down, mortgage rates will come down as well, and the Fed acknowledges that. But I'm not waiting. I want to provide an annual tax credit that will give Americans $400 a month for the next 2 years as mortgage rates come down, to put toward their mortgages when they buy their first home or trade up for a little more space. Just for 2 years. And my administration is also eliminating title insurance on federally backed mortgages. When you refinance your home, you can save $1,000 or more as a consequence. For millions of renters, we're cracking down on big landlords who use antitrust law, who break antitrust laws by price fixing and driving up rents. We've cut red tape so builders can get federally financing, which is already helping build a record 1.7 million new housing units nationwide. Now pass. Now pass and build and renovate 2 million affordable homes and bring those rents down. To remain the strongest economy in the world, we need to have the best education system in the world. And I, like I suspect all of you, want to give a child, every child, a good start by providing access to preschool for 3 and 4 years old. You know, I think I pointed out last year that children coming from broken homes where there's no books, they're not read to, not spoken to very often, start school, kindergarten, or first grade, having heard a million fewer words spoken. Well, studies show that children who go to preschool are nearly 50% more likely to finish high school, go on to earn a 2- and 4-year degree, no matter what their background is. I met a year and a half ago with the leaders of the Business Roundtable. They were mad that they were angry. I think, well, they were discussing why I wanted to spend money on education. I pointed out to them, as vice president, I met with over 182 of those folks. Don't hold me to the exact number. And I asked them what they need most, the CEOs. And you've had the same experience on both sides of the aisle. They say a better educated workforce, right? So I looked at them, and I say, I come from Delaware. DuPont used to be the 8th largest corporation in the world. And every new enterprise they bought, they educated the workforce to that enterprise. But none of you do that anymore. Why are you angry with me
providing you the opportunity for the best educated workforce in the world. And they all looked at me and said, I think you're right. I want to expand high-quality tutoring and summer learning to see that every child learns to read by third grade. I'm also connecting local businesses and high schools so students get hands-on experience and a path to good-paying job, whether or not they go to college. And I want to make sure the college is more affordable. Let's continue increasing the Pell Grants to working and middle-class families and increase record investments in HBCUs and minority-serving institutions, including Hispanic institutions. When I was told I couldn't universally just change the way in which we dealt with student loans, I fixed two student loan programs that already existed to reduce the burden of student debt for nearly 4 million Americans, including nurses, firefighters, and others in public service. Like Keenan Jones, a public educator from Minnesota, who's here with us tonight. Keenan, where are you? Keenan, thank you. He's educated hundreds of students so they can go to college. Now he's able to help, after debt forgiveness, get his own daughter to college. And folks, look, such relief is good for the economy because folks are now able to buy a home, start a business, start a family. While we're at it, I want to give public school teachers a raise. And by the way, the first couple of years, we cut the deficit. Now, let me speak to the question of fundamental fairness for all Americans. I've been delivering real results in fiscally responsible ways. We've already cut the federal deficit. We've already cut the federal deficit over $1 trillion. I signed the bipartisan deal to cut another $1 trillion in the next decade. It's my goal to cut the federal deficit another $3 trillion by making big corporations and very wealthy finally beginning to pay their fair share. Look, I'm a capitalist. If you want to make or can make a million or millions of bucks, that's great. Just pay your fair share in taxes. A fair tax code is how we invest things to make this country great. Healthcare, education, defense, and so much more. But here's the deal. The last administration enacted a $2 trillion tax cut. Overwhelmingly benefit the top 1%, the very wealthy and the biggest corporation. And exploded the federal deficit. They added more to the national debt than any presidential term in American history. Check the numbers. Folks at home, does anybody really think the tax code is fair?
No!
Do you really think the wealthy and big corporations need another $2 trillion tax break?
No!
I sure don't. I'm going to keep fighting like hell to make it fair. Under my plan, nobody earning less than $400,000 a year will pay an additional penny in federal taxes. Nobody, not one penny. And they haven't yet. In fact, the child tax credit I passed during the pandemic cut taxes for millions of working families and cut child poverty in half. Restore that child tax credit. No child should go hungry in this country. The way to make the tax code fair is to make big corporations and the very wealthy begin to pay their fair share. Remember in 2020, 55 of the biggest companies in America made $40 billion and paid zero in federal income tax. Zero. Not anymore. Thanks to the law I wrote and we signed, big companies have to pay a minimum of 15%. But that's still less than working people pay in federal taxes. It's time to raise corporate minimum tax to at least 21%.
So every big corporation finally begins to pay their fair share. I also want to end tax breaks for big pharma, big oil, private jets, massive executive pay when it's only supposed to be $1 million that could be deducted. They can pay them $20 million if they want, but deduct $1 million. End it now. You know, there are 1,000 billionaires in America. You know what the average federal tax is for those billionaires? No. They're making great sacrifices, 8.2%. That's far less than the vast majority of Americans pay. No billionaire should pay a lower federal tax rate than a teacher, a sanitation worker, or a nurse. I propose a minimum tax for billionaires of 25%, just 25%. You know what that would raise? That would raise $500 billion over the next 10 years. And imagine what that could do for America. Imagine a future with affordable child care. Millions of families can get they need to go to work to help grow the economy. Imagine a future with paid leave, because no one should have to choose between working and taking care of their sick family member. Imagine a future of home care and elder care and people living with disabilities, so they can stay in their homes and family caregivers can finally get the pay they deserve. Tonight, let's all agree once again to stand up for seniors. Many of my friends on the other side of the aisle want to put Social Security on the chopping block. If anyone here tries to cut Social Security, Medicare, or raise the retirement age, I will stop you. The working people who built this country pay more into Social Security than millionaires and billionaires do. It's not fair. We have two ways to go. Republicans can cut Social Security and give more tax breaks to the wealthy. That's the proposal. Oh, no. You guys don't want another $2 trillion tax cut? I kind of thought that's what your plan was. Well, that's good to hear. You're not going to cut another $2 trillion for the super wealthy. That's good to hear. I'll protect and strengthen Social Security and make the wealthy pay their fair share. Look. Too many corporations raise prices to pad their profits, charging more and more for less and less. That's why we're cracking down on corporations engaged in price gouging and deceptive pricing, from food to health care to housing. In fact, the snack companies think you won't notice if they change the size of the bag and put a hell of a lot fewer — same size bag, put fewer chips in it. No, I'm not joking. It's called shrinkflation. Pass Bobby Casey's bill and stop this. I really mean it. You probably all saw that commercial on Snickers bars. You get charged the same amount, and you got about, I don't know, 10% fewer Snickers in it. Look, I'm also getting rid of junk fees, those hidden fees at the end of your bill that are there without your knowledge. My administration announced we're cutting credit card late fees from $32 to $8. Banks and credit card companies are allowed to charge what it costs them to instigate the collection. And that's more, a hell of a lot, like $8.30-some. They don't like it. Credit card companies don't like it. But I'm saving American families $20 billion a year with all the junk fees I'm eliminating. Folks at home, that's why the banks are so mad, is $20 billion in profit. I'm not stopping there. My administration has proposed rules to make cable, travel, utilities, and online ticket sellers tell you the total price up front so there are no surprises. It matters. It matters. And so does this. In November, my team began serious negotiation with a bipartisan group of senators. The result was a bipartisan bill with the toughest set of border security reforms we've ever seen. Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't like that bill, huh? That conservatives got together and said it was a good bill? I'll be darned. That's amazing. That bipartisan bill would hire 1,500 more security agents and officers, 100 more immigration judges to help tackle the backload of 2 million cases, 4,300 more asylum officers, and new policies so they can resolve cases in 6 months instead of 6 years now. What are you against? 100 more high-tech drug detection machines to significantly increase the ability to screen and stop vehicles smuggling fentanyl into America. That's killing thousands of children. This bill would save lives and bring order to the border. It would also give me and any new president new emergency authority to temporarily shut down the border when the number of migrants at the border is overwhelming. The Border Patrol Union has endorsed this bill. The Federal Chamber of Commerce is — yeah. You're saying low. Look at the facts. I know you know how to read. I believe that given the opportunity for a majority in the House and Senate would endorse the bill as well, a majority right now. But unfortunately, politics has derailed this bill so far. I'm told my predecessor called members of Congress in the Senate to demand they block the bill. He feels a political win. He viewed it as it'll be a political win for me and a political loser for him. It's not about him. It's not about me. I'd be a winner. Not really. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself. I understand. But look, if we change the dynamic at the border, people pay these smugglers $8,000 to get across the border because they know if they get by and let into the country, it's 6 to 8 years before they have a hearing. And it's worth taking the chance of the $8,000. But if it's only 6 weeks, the idea is it's highly unlikely that people will pay that money and gum all that way, knowing that they'll be able to be kicked out quickly. Folks, I would respectfully suggest my Republican friends owe it to the American people, get this bill done. We need to act now. And if my predecessor is watching, instead of paying politics and pressuring members of Congress to block the bill, join me in telling the Congress to pass it. We can do it together. But that's what he apparently hears what he will not do. I will not demonize immigrants saying they are poison in the blood of our country. I will not separate families. I will not ban people because of their faith. Unlike my predecessor, on my first day in office, I introduced a comprehensive bill to fix our immigration system. Take a look at it, as all these and more. Secure the border. Provide a pathway to citizenship for dreamers. And so much more. But unlike my predecessor, I know who we are as Americans. We're the only nation in the world with a heart and soul that draws from old and new. home to Native Americans and ancestors have been here for thousands of years, home to people of every place, from every place on earth. They came freely. Some came in chains. Some came when famine struck, like my ancestral family in Ireland. Some to flee persecution, to chase dreams that are impossible anywhere but here in America. That's America. And we all come from somewhere, but we're all Americans. Look, folks, we have a simple choice. We can fight about fixing the border, or we can fix it. I'm ready to fix it. Send me the border bill now. A transformational moment in history happened 59 years ago today in Selma, Alabama. Hundreds of foot soldiers for justice marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, named after the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, to claim their fundamental right to vote. They were beaten, they were bloody, and left for dead. Our late friend and former colleague John Lewis was on that march. We miss him. Joining us tonight are other marchers, both in the gallery and on the floor, including Betty Mae Fikes, known as the Voice of Selma. The daughter of gospel singers and preachers, she sang songs of prayer and protest on that bloody Sunday to help shake the nation's conscience. 5 months later, the Voting Rights Act passed and was signed into law. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But 59 years later, there are forces taking us back in time. Voter suppression, election subversion, unlimited dark money, extreme gerrymandering. Yeah. John Lewis is a great friend to many of us here. But if you truly want to honor him and all the heroes who marched with him, then it's time to do more than talk. Yeah. Pass the Freedom to Vote Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And stop denying another core value of America, our diversity across American life. Banning books, it's wrong. Instead of erasing history, let's make history. I want to protect fundamental rights. Pass the Equality Act. And my message to transgender Americans, I have your back. Pass the PRO Act for workers' rights. Raise the federal minimum wage, because every worker has a right to a decent living more than $7 an hour. We're also making history by confronting the climate crisis, not denying it. I don't think any of you think there's no longer a climate crisis. At least I hope you don't. I'm taking the most significant action ever on climate in the history of the world. I'm cutting our carbon emissions in half by 2030, creating tens of thousands of clean energy jobs, like the IBEW workers building and installing 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. Conserving 30% of America's lands and waters by 2030. And taking action on environmental justice, fence line communities smothered by the legacy of pollution. In pattern after the Peace Corps and America Corps, I launched the Climate Corps to put 20,000 young people to work in the forefront of our clean energy future. I'll triple that number in a decade. Yeah. To state the obvious, all Americans deserve the freedom to be safe. And America is safer today than when I took office. Year before I took office, murder rates went up 30%. 30% they went up. The biggest increase in history. It was then, through my American Rescue Plan, which every American voted against, I might add, we made the largest investment in public safety ever. Last year, the murder rate saw the sharpest decrease in history. Violent crime fell to one of its lowest levels in more than 50 years. But we have more to do. We have to help cities invest in more community police officers, more mental health workers, more community violence intervention. Give communities the tool to crack down on gun crime, retail crime, and carjacking. Keep building trust, as I've been doing, by taking executive action on police reform and calling for it to be the law of the land. Directing my cabinet to review the federal classification of marijuana and expunging thousands of convictions for the mere possession, because no one should be jailed for simply using or having on their record. Take on crimes of domestic violence. I'm ramping up the federal enforcement of the Violence Against Women Act that I proudly wrote when I was a senator, so we can finally end the scourge against women in America. There are other kinds of violence I want to stop. With us tonight is Jasmine, whose 9-year-old sister Jackie was murdered with 21 classmates and teachers in elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. Very soon after that happened, Jill and I went to Uvalde for a couple of days. We spent hours and hours with each of the families. We heard their message, so everyone in this room, in this chamber, could hear the same message. The constant refrain, and I was there for hours meeting with every family. They said, do something. Do something. Well, I did do something by establishing the first ever Office of Gun Violence Prevention in the White House, that the Vice President is leading the charge. Thank you for doing it. Meanwhile, my predecessor told the NRA he's proud he did nothing on guns when he was president. Oof. After another shooting in Iowa recently, he said, when asked what to do about it, he said, just get over it. There's his quote, just get over it. I say, stop it. Stop it, stop it, stop it. I'm proud we beat the NRA when I signed the most significant gun safety law in nearly 30 years because of this Congress. We now must beat the NRA again. I'm demanding a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Pass universal background checks. None of this. I taught the Second Amendment for 12 years. None of this violates the Second Amendment or vilifies responsible gun owners. You know, as we manage challenges at home, we're also managing crises abroad, including in the Middle East. I know the last 5 months have been gut-wrenching for so many people, for the Israeli people, for the Palestinian people, and so many here in America. This crisis began on October 7th with a massacre by a terrorist group called Hamas, as you all know. 1,200 innocent people, women and girls, men and boys, slaughtered after enduring sexual violence. The deadliest day for the Jewish people since the Holocaust. And 250 hostages taken. Here in this chamber tonight are families whose loved ones are still being held by Hamas. I pledge to all the families that we will not rest until we bring every one of your loved ones home. We also... We will also work around the clock to bring home Evan and Paul, Americans being unjustly detained by the Russians and others around the world. Israel has the right to go after Hamas. Hamas ended this conflict by releasing hostages, laying down arms, could end it by releasing the hostages, laying down arms, and surrendering those responsible for October 7th. But Israel has an added burden because Hamas hides and operates among the civilian population like cowards under hospitals, daycare centers, and all the like. Israel also has a fundamental responsibility, though, to protect innocent civilians in Gaza. This war has taken a greater toll on innocent civilians than all previous wars in Gaza combined. More than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, most of whom are not Hamas. Thousands and thousands of innocents, women and children, girls and boys, also orphaned. Nearly 2 million more Palestinians under bombardment or displacement. Homes destroyed, neighbors in rubble, cities in ruin. Families without food, water, medicine. It's heartbreaking. I've been working nonstop to establish an immediate ceasefire that would last for 6 weeks to get all the prisoners released, all the hostages released, to get the hostages home and ease the intolerable and humanitarian crisis and build toward something more enduring. The United States has been leading international efforts to get more humanitarian assistance to Gaza. Tonight, I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground. A temporary pier will enable a massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Gaza every day. And Israel must do its part. Israel must allow more aid into Gaza to ensure humanitarian workers aren't caught in the crossfire. And they're announcing they're going to have a crossing in northern Gaza. To the leadership of Israel, I say this. Humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or a bargaining chip. Protecting and saving innocent lives has to be a priority. As we look to the future, the only real solution to the situation is a two-state solution over time. And I say this as a lifelong supporter of Israel. My entire career, no one has a stronger record with Israel than I do. I challenge any of you here. I'm the only American president to visit Israel in wartime. But there is no other path that guarantees Israel's security and democracy. There is no other path that guarantees that Palestinians can live in peace with peace and dignity. And there's no other path that guarantees peace between Israel and all of its neighbors, including Saudi Arabia, with whom I'm talking. Creating stability in the Middle East also means containing the threat posed by Iran. That's why I built a coalition of more than a dozen countries to defend international shipping and freedom of navigation in the Red Sea. I've ordered strikes to degrade the Houthi capability and defend U.S. forces in the region. As Commander-in-Chief, I will not hesitate to direct further measures to protect our people and our military personnel. For years, I've heard many of my Republican and Democratic friends say that China is on the rise and America's falling behind. They've got it backwards. I've been saying it for over 4 years, even when I wasn't president. America's rising. We have the best economy in the world. And since I've come to office, our GDP is up, our trade deficit with China is down to the lowest point in over a decade. And we're standing up against China's unfair economic practices. We're standing up for peace and stability across the Taiwan Straits. I've revitalized our partnership and alliance in the Pacific. India, Australia, Japan, South Korea, Pacific Islands. I've made sure that the most advanced American technologies can't be used in China, not allowing to trade them there. Frankly, for all this tough talk on China, it never occurred to my predecessor to do any of that. I want competition with China, not conflict. And we're in a stronger position to win the conflict of the 21st century against China than anyone else, for that matter, than any time as well. Here at home, I've signed over 400 bipartisan bills. But there's more to pass my unity agenda. Strengthen penalties on fentanyl trafficking. You don't want to do that, huh? Pass bipartisan privacy legislation to protect our children online. Harness the promise of AI to protect us from peril. Ban AI voice impersonations and more. And keep our truly sacred obligation to train and equip those we send into harm's way and care for them and their families when they come home and when they don't. That's why, with the strong support and help of Dennis and the VA, I signed the PACT Act, one of the most significant laws ever, helping millions of veterans exposed to toxins who now are battling more than 100 different cancers. Many of them don't come home, but we owe them and their families support. We owe it to ourselves to keep supporting our new health research agency called ARPA-H, and remind us that we can do big things, like end cancer as we know it, and we will. Let me close with this. Yay! I know you don't want to hear any more, Lindsay, but I got to say a few more things. I know it may not look like it, but I've been around a while. When you get to be my age, certain things become clearer than ever. I know the American story. Again and again, I've seen the contest between competing forces and the battle for the soul of our nation, between those who want to pull America back to the past and those who want to move America into the future. My lifetime has taught me to embrace freedom and democracy, a future based on core values that have defined America: honesty, decency, dignity, equality, to respect everyone, to give everyone a fair shot, to give hate no safe harbor. Now, other people my age see it differently. The American story of resentment, revenge, and retribution, that's not me. I was born amid World War II, when America stood for the freedom of the world. I grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and Claymont, Delaware, among working-class people who built this country. I watched in horror as two of my heroes, like many of you did, Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy, were assassinated. And their legacies inspired me to pursue a career in service. I left the law firm and became a public defender because my city of Wilmington was the only city in America occupied by the National Guard after Dr. King was assassinated because of the riots. And I became a county councilman almost by accident. I got elected to the United States Senate when I had no intention of running at age 29. Then vice president of our first black president. Now president to the first women vice president. In my career, I've been told I was too young. By the way, they didn't let me on the Senate elevators for votes sometimes. Not a joke. And I've been told I'm too old. Whether young or old, I've always known what endures. I've known our North Star. The very idea of America is that we're all created equal, and deserves to be treated equally throughout our lives. We've never fully lived up to that idea, but we've never walked away from it either. And I won't walk away from it now. I'm optimistic. I really am. I'm optimistic, Nancy. My fellow Americans, the issue facing our nation isn't how old we are, it's how old are our ideas. Hate, anger, revenge, retribution are the oldest of ideas. But you can't lead America with ancient ideas that only take us back. You lead America, the land of possibilities. You need a vision for the future and what can and should be done. Tonight you've heard mine. I see a future where defending democracy, you don't diminish it. I see a future where we restore the right to choose and protect our freedoms, not take them away. I see a future where the middle class finally has a fair shot and the wealthy have to pay their fair share in taxes. I see a future where we save the planet from the climate crisis and our country from gun violence. Above all, I see a future for all Americans. I see a country for all Americans. And I will always be president for all Americans. Because I believe in America. I believe in you, the American people. You're the reason we've never been more optimistic about our future than I am now. So let's build the future together. Let's remember who we are. We are the United States of America. And there is nothing, nothing beyond our capacity when we act together. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
My goodness. Wow. Was that quite something to see or quite something to see? I mean, where to begin? Because there were so many lies that were just littered all over the place there, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, just, you know, I don't think I've ever been so worked up on a live feed. Charles, I saw you and Leslie talking about how if only you guys could type faster, right? Like, I felt it too. Like, I'm like, yeah. All right. So, a lot of stuff in there, but basically, suffice it to say, I mean, he led with Ukraine, so he still wants that money for Ukraine, and Americans, they don't want to give him the money for Ukraine. This is a whole problem. I did a whole show on this the other day. I mean, we talked about how we've gone from 17 countries in NATO to 30. I have this theory that somehow nobody could do with themselves after the Cold War, so they took Dick Cheney's advice and later Bill Clinton's, and they decided to beef up this whole spy network and bring NATO in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now we've got ourselves in a really delicate situation because you've got Tony Blinken running things, who's clearly not a great diplomat, not a great diplomat. We are going to be looking forward to hearing none other than Katie Britt, the junior senator from none other than Alabama, who's going to be speaking momentarily. I want you to see this because this is a woman, I mean, I think she's an outlier, but her name has come up potentially as somebody who might be in the running as a vice president for Donald Trump. Again, she's kind of the dark horse in the race, but she's a young woman, a mother. She's the youngest woman to ever be the standing senator from any, she's 42 years old, I believe. any states. So she's going to be delivering the Republican State of the Union response. But before we go to Ms. Britt, I mean, you heard what he said. I mean, the inflation stuff, you know that just, it's like nails on a chalkboard for me when he starts talking about how we gotta tax corporations more. Guys, we used to tax corporations a whole lot. And then Donald Trump came into office and he said, you know, this doesn't really make a lot of sense because all of these corporations, they're running overseas to places like Ireland and they're headquartering themselves over there. I wrote a front page column on this actually for USA Today long before Donald Trump was president saying this is a problem. Like you have these shotgun marriages, right, that are happening because these companies want a lower tax rate. So they're like merging with some company in Ireland. They're sending all these jobs over there. And guess what? They're sending all this cash over there. So what did Trump do? He said, you know what? You can bring it all back. You're going to have a lower tax rate. We'll give you some forgiveness for bringing it. And it helped the U.S. economy because let's not send all our companies elsewhere. Let's have our corporations here in America. This is where policy chops are important. You cannot tax your way to prosperity. The way you grow is by giving people more of what they're bringing in. Because then they have skin in the game, okay? You want everybody to have some skin in the game. You don't want handouts. And he's got this whole thing about, you know, and by the way, the middle class, they're the ones that always get screwed, frankly, excuse my French, with that, because the ones on top, oh, they're doing fine. Like he pointed out, and I don't disagree with him, a lot of billionaires are hardly paying tax. They're paying hardly no tax because, well, a lot of them are private equity investors, and a lot of them donate heavily to Joe Biden's campaign and Republican campaigns as well. You know, they're smart. They're like, we just put a little money into their campaigns and they leave us alone. And so a lot of those billionaires that are paying less in taxes, it's because they've got this really ridiculous special provision that they're provided. I like to call it the fat cat tax loophole. And so none of these guys will close it. Biden won't close it because these are his friends. And so all they're going to do is go after the person making $401,000, right? So if you're a couple and you're $401,000, I guess that totally disincentivizes you to ever get to a $500,000 because why would you? Joe's just going to tax you more to redistribute wealth to all of those people, not in the middle class. No, the middle class is paying through the nose. It's all the people that, oh, I don't know, are getting flown in and put on planes in the dead of the night and handed cell phones and getting 6-month hotel stays and cash cards. ATM cards so that they have money. I mean, what is that really? I mean, he tried to get into the border stuff. I'm telling you, nobody's buying it. You know what he said on the border? I played this earlier. Let's see if we can pull it up again because it's really pathetic. Every time Joe tries to tell you about the border or the problems of fentanyl, etc., just remember this. Remember what Joe Biden said in the Democrat debate about the border. Here we go. He wanted the search. He wanted them.
I would, in fact, make sure that there is, we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come. I would, in fact, make sure that there is, we immediately surge to
we
the
really
border.
Don't need to hear
all
it
those
twice,
people
right?
are seeking asylum.
We got you, okay? You wanted this. And there's plenty more examples of this. And tonight he tried to have it both ways, right? He tries, oh, you know, we Americans, like, we welcome everybody because we're a nation of immigrants. Yeah. Okay, I gotcha. We are. And actually, that's a great strength of ours. But only if we do this in the proper way. I mean, you know, I got relatives that came in during the potato famine. Let me tell you, you didn't just, like, come in and get handed a hotel stay. And get handed, I mean, I've got some great stories. Someday when we have more time and Katie Britt isn't coming up, I'll tell you them. And they're important stories. And they're stories that were told to me as a child. And I think that we're losing that, right? We're losing our history in America. We don't want to talk about our beginnings. Suddenly we hate all of our founding fathers for some reason. Oh, because they lived in a time that was incredibly different, a time of slavery. And for whatever reason, the extremists on the left are not willing to actually view the world through a lens that would have existed then. No. They only view it through today's time. So you have to erase history. And by erasing history, you erase our culture. You erase everything. I mean, even when you think of, you know, the challenges that Black Americans have had to overcome that may have had their origins as slaves in America. I mean, that's something as well that we have to talk about and that they should be proud of, for goodness sakes. I mean, why are we erasing everything? That is what these people want to do. He went on about how, you know, he's reducing inflation. Yeah, right, buddy. He wants everybody to pay more taxes. I just say, can we start with Hunter, please? I mean, because I never understood. Remember when he wanted to examine everybody's bank account who had more than $600 in it? In all seriousness, oh, this was amazing to me. And Janet Yellen sat there with a straight face, our Treasury Secretary, former head of the Federal Reserve, and she said, well, this is a way for us to go after billionaires. I'm like, I'm sorry, billionaires? You got $600 in your checking account, and the IRS wants to peek in on it? I mean, are you kidding me? And that was one of his very grand ideas in the very, very beginning. That's how we're going to, like, fix this and make sure the billionaires pay their fair share. I'm sick of hearing this because you know what? Hunter never paid his fair share. And if you really want to buckle down and look at a few things, I mean, he chose an S, I'm going to wonk out on you for a second, an S corporation for himself, for his book and his speaking deals, by which he saved some, I don't know what it was, $50,000 in taxes. He could have given the $50,000 over, but no, he's aggressively with his accountants trying to save every single dime and penny. And his own son's not even bothering to declare the income. So how is he going to sit there and tell us that everybody else needs to pay their fair share? I don't think so. I don't appreciate any of it. I do want to point out that we are waiting on none other than Katie Britt. Let me see if I can show you this right here. She's going to be speaking momentarily, and we're gonna carry that live because she's kind of a new up-and-comer in the Republican Party, and they like to do that. They like to give these opportunities. Remember Marco Rubio. Cheers to Marco Rubio, right? I gotta say, I'm amazed that Biden made it through that. I mean, what do you guys think? Amazed. I think that there was more than coffee going on. I'm joking. Sort of not. I mean, I don't know how we made it through that. You've seen what's been going on lately. I mean, that little number the other day where he just started zoning out, spacing out, he just really couldn't string a sentence together. I'm just reading through some of your comments here. please be careful with how I dress. Oh, goodness gracious. Reba, thank you. Hopefully this is respectable enough. Hey, this is a good chance for me to get one of my commercials in because I've been meaning to. Hopefully you think I look okay. I think everybody thinks I look okay. I feel okay. I feel great, actually. I feel great. And one of the reasons is, as we wait for Ms. Katie Britt, because I've actually started taking some supplements for like the first time ever because, no, I don't take my vitamins. I should. I drink a lot of water, but I don't take my vitamins the way I said, oopsie daisy, where did I go? Let's see if I can get me back on camera here somehow, some way. Maybe not. Anyway, I'm just going to dodge a balance of nature. 1-800-246-8751. Again, it's 1-800-246-8751. So balance of nature is what I have been taking. They have these veggie and fruit capsules, which are just terrific. And gluten-free, and they don't have any preservatives, any of the bad stuff, right? Like, this is very, very good and very, very healthy for you. And so I've been like, okay, you know, it's that time in my life when I actually should prioritize things like my health. I gotta tell you, I felt great. I mean, clearly not as great as Joe Biden was feeling tonight, right? What was he taking? This is all natural. The company's been around for 20 years. Really fabulous story about how it was founded. You can read all of it online if you could. balanceofnature.com. I want to point out that you can get a great discount if you use my name, my first name, Trish, and you should, because if you're interested in getting this, it's absolutely fantastic. I feel great. The veggies and fruit capsules, they make a difference. Again, thousands of people write in like every single month. They've had so many wonderful success stories. You can read them online. I encourage you to do that. balanceofnature.com. And if you use my name, my first name, T-R-I-S-H, you will get the 35% off. I haven't seen that deal anywhere else. So make sure you do that if you're interested in feeling as good as I do. Anyway, you know, this is really, really just, it's like hard to sit there and and watch this, right? And Charles Thorngren, who runs the wonderful company that has been a sponsor on this show from day one, Legacy Precious Metals, legacypminvestments.com. If you're worried about inflation, you should be, because you know what? Inflation's up 18% since Biden took office. You should call his team. There's just a wonderful group of salespeople there, and it's not like high pressure or anything. I think that they can help walk you through some of those opportunities. And their number is 1-866-589-0560, 1-866-589-0560. So Charles Thorngren in the chat, you know, I was laughing at some of the things that he was saying, and I can put his HTT. Can I walk and chew gum at the same time, Charles? Can I actually type this in? HTTP legacy PM investments. Here we go. Investments.com. There we go. Yeah. I think I got that right. It's hard to type and talk. I mean, that's why it's hard to type, let's be honest, right? I think we all found that as we were like furiously writing everything in there. But look, I think that the reality is, hey, Jim, good to see you. I think the reality is this. We have an economy that's in a really difficult spot because of some very bad decisions that were made one after another. I mean, Joe came in and gave out the third stimulus check. I wasn't even happy. You know I like Trump. You know I like his policies, but I was not really happy with the second stimulus check. I was worried about inflation then because you had the Federal Reserve doing what it was doing. And then on top of that, you had Congress saying, oh, well, we want this and we want that and we want this in there. So they threw everything they possibly could in there. So there was more money spent. And then the Federal Reserve on top of it all. Jerome Powell actually was speaking on Capitol Hill today. Jerome's like, oh, yeah, let me go for it, too. And so he printed more money. And so the consequence of that is what we're living with right now. And the crazy thing about it all is that Joe Biden thinks he can print more. He thinks that he can get more for Ukraine, for student loans. I mean, guys, I'm sorry, but like, how is that fair? I remember when I was a student at Columbia, and I had used some of my Miss America money to pay for school. Because I won the talent competition. I won the award for the contestant with the most promise in performing arts. I was an opera singer a lifetime ago. And so I needed money for school. And I competed, and I went to New Hampshire, and then I won all this at the national level. And so suddenly I had a little money for school. I left the conservatory, decided, okay, maybe this opera thing is a little too much opportunity cost. And I went back to Columbia, and I remember not being able to barely afford anything, right? They had a room with a sink you could get. There was like a sink or no sink, and it was an extra $50 for the sink. And I was like, nope, can't afford it. You know, I could barely afford to eat. Like, it was really, really tight. And I paid for my school. I worked while I was in school. I tried to stagger my classes so they were in the morning and then they were in the afternoon. I was committed to getting a really good education, to getting good grades, and making sure I could support myself and get a job after school, because I was terrified. I had taken out more money. I mean, I had some little stash right from the Miss America thing, but I had taken out student loans. And it's the reality of what you do. You make an investment in yourself. Now, I'm not saying education is even the right investment. I mean, I don't necessarily think I feel like I learned a lot on my own. And not necessarily through classes per se, but you make choices. And some people say, you know what, I'm gonna become an electrician, I'm gonna become a plumber, I'm gonna become a truck driver, whatever it is, right? You're making an investment in yourself, you're making a choice. And even if it's not actual cash, it's what we in economics like to call an opportunity cost, right? So had I continued on studying opera, and believe me, I mean, I was very close to taking a deal in Germany and going over there being what they call a house soprano, where I would have been like the 11 o'clock news anchor, except in opera, if there is such a thing. Anyway, I was like, okay, I can do this, but there's an opportunity cost. The opportunity costs are these years that are really, really important when I could actually maybe find a different path, a more secure path, whatever it is. So I don't understand why Joe Biden thinks it's somehow on all of us to cover some 18-year-old kid's decision to go to Timbuktu College and live it up for 4 years, assuming they even graduate. And then maybe they graduate and then they go back for a master's and another master's. I mean, have you met these people that are just like always in school? And I'm like, how do you do that? Like, don't you have any kind of reality check on you? And no, they don't, because you know what? It's free money. The government provides a lot of this through Pell Grants and other things. And there's also free money by way of student loans, right? Because like they're there writing a blank check. You want to know why there's inflation in education? Boom. That's exactly why there's inflation. You don't want the government involved in this with handouts, more handouts. No, let's actually have people pay for their educations. Make educated decisions to pay for their educations. And you see how many kids are going out and getting those gender study degrees, right? If you actually have to pay it back, cheers to live free or die in New Hampshire. I'll tell you, all wrong. But again, we're waiting on Katie Britt right now, who's going to be speaking momentarily. And she's the new superstar, young Republican, 42 years old, young mom. I have, I've heard a lot of names, right? And been talking about them here, for vice president. On the GOP ticket, Katie Britt has been mentioned, but very sort of in passing. There is a sense that Donald Trump would like to have somebody that sort of surprises everyone. The flip side of that is he also doesn't want to look like he's kowtowing to anyone, that he's just plucking a woman out to try and get the women's vote. Although, you know, we've had a lot of discussions about this too. I think he has to actually think about where he might be missing in some of the demographics. That's why Nikki's trying to be hard to get. Nikki Haley, who spectacularly finally left this race. I keep saying, like, what was she thinking? Like, why? How did she really? Maybe somebody was paying her or promising her something. Like, hey, Nikki, you stay in this thing, and we promise you, we will make it worth your while. But like, there was no chance. I said it with DeSantis. I said it with her. It's nothing against them personally, but they do have their challenges as politicians. I mean, let's face it, Donald Trump is one of those rare people that connects on a lot of different levels. He has one of those personalities that you love or you hate. And a lot of people hate him as well. Just go watch MSNBC right now and you'll see that. Go turn on The View tomorrow morning and you'll see that. Okay, here's Katie. So I want to go straight to her right now.
Like so many families across America, my husband, Wesley, and I just watched President Biden's State of the Union address from our living room. And what we saw was the performance of a permanent politician who has actually been in office for longer than I've been alive. One thing was quite clear, though. President Biden just doesn't get it. He's out of touch. Under his administration, families are worse off. Our communities are less safe, and our country is less secure. I just wish he understood what real families are facing around kitchen tables just like this one. You know, this is where our family has tough conversations. It's where we make hard decisions. It's where we share the good, the bad, and the ugly of our days. It's where we laugh together. And it's where we hold each other's hands and pray for God's guidance. And many nights, to be honest, it's where Wesley and I worry. I know we're not alone. And so tonight, the American family needs to have a tough conversation, because the truth is, we're all worried about the future of our nation. The country we know and love seems to be slipping away, and it feels like the next generation will have fewer opportunities and less freedoms than we did. I worry my own children may not even get a shot at living their American dreams. My American dream allowed me, the daughter of two small business owners from rural Enterprise, Alabama, to be elected to the United States Senate at the age of 40. Growing up, sweeping the floor at my dad's hardware store and cleaning the bathroom at my mom's dance studio, I never could have imagined what my story would entail. To think about what the American dream can do across just one generation, in just one lifetime, it's truly breathtaking. But Right now, the American dream has turned into a nightmare for so many families. The true, unvarnished state of our union begins and ends with this. Our families are hurting.
About what the American dream
can our do. Country
across
can
justice.
Do better. And you don't have to look any further than the crisis at our southern border to see it. President Biden inherited the most secure border of all time. But minutes after taking office, he suspended all deportations, he halted construction of the border wall, and he announced a plan to give amnesty to millions. We know that President Biden didn't just create this border crisis. He invited it with 94 executive actions in his first 100 days. When I took office, I took a different approach. I traveled to the Del Rio sector of Texas. That's where I spoke to a woman who shared her story with me. She had been sex trafficked by the cartels starting at the age of 12. She told me not just that she was raped every day, but how many times a day she was raped. The cartels put her on a mattress in a shoebox of a room, and they sent men through that door over and over again for hours and hours on end. We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it. President Biden's border policies are a disgrace. This crisis is despicable, and the truth is, it is almost entirely preventable. From fentanyl poisonings to horrific murders, there are empty chairs tonight at kitchen tables just like this one because of President Biden's senseless border policies. Just think about Lake and Riley. In my neighboring state of Georgia, this beautiful 22-year-old nursing student went out on a jog one morning, but she never got the opportunity to return home. She was brutally murdered by one of the millions of illegal border crossers President Biden chose to release into our homeland. Y'all, as a mom, I can't quit thinking about this. I mean, this could have been my daughter. This could have been yours. And tonight, President Biden finally said her name. But he refused to take responsibility for his own actions. Mr. President, enough is enough. Innocent Americans are dying, and you only have yourself to blame. Fulfill your oath of office. Reverse your policies. End this crisis and stop the suffering. Sadly, we know that President Biden's failures don't stop there. His reckless spending dug our economy into a hole and sent the cost of living through the roof. We have the worst inflation in 40 years and the highest credit card debt in our nation's history. Let that sink in. Hardworking families are struggling to make ends meet today. And with soaring mortgage rates and sky-high childcare costs, they're also struggling to how to plan for tomorrow. The American people are scraping by while President Biden proudly proclaims that Bidenomics is working. Goodness, y'all. Bless his heart. We know better. I'll never forget stopping at a gas station in Chilton County one evening. The gentleman working the counter told me that after retiring, he had to pick up a job in his 70s so that he didn't have to choose between going hungry or going without his medication. He said, I did everything right. I did everything I was told to do. I worked hard. I saved. I was responsible. He's not alone. I hear similar concerns from fellow parents, whether I am walking with my friends or whether I'm at my kids' games. But let's be honest, it's been a minute since Joe Biden pumped gas, ran a carpool, or even pushed a grocery cart. Meanwhile, the rest of us see our dollar and we know it doesn't go as far. We see it every day. And despite what he tells you, our communities are not safer. For years, the left has coddled criminals and defunded the police, all while letting repeat offenders walk free. The result is tragic, but foreseeable. From our small towns to America's most iconic city streets, life is getting more and more dangerous. And unfortunately, President Biden's weakness isn't just hurting families here at home. He is making us a punchline on the world stage. Look, where I'm from, your word is your bond. But for 3 years, the president has demonstrated that America's word doesn't mean what it used to. From abandoning our allies in his disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan to desperately pushing another dangerous deal with Iran, President Biden has failed. We've become a nation in retreat, and the enemies of freedom, they see an opportunity. Putin's brutal aggression in Europe has put our allies on the brink. Iran's terrorist proxies have slaughtered Israeli Jews and American citizens. They've targeted commercial shipping, and they've attacked our troops nearly 200 times since October, killing 3 U.S. soldiers and 2 Navy SEALs. Meanwhile, the Chinese Communist Party is undercutting America's workers. China is buying up our farmland, spying on our military installations, and spreading propaganda through the likes of TikTok. You see, the CCP knows that if it conquers the minds of our next generation, it conquers America. And what does President Biden do? Well, he bans TikTok for government employees, but creates an account for his own campaign. Y'all, you can't make this stuff up. Look, we all recall when presidents faced national security threats with strength and resolve. That seems like ancient history. Right now, our commander-in-chief is not in command. The free world deserves better than a dithering and diminished leader. America deserves leaders who recognize that secure borders, stable prices, safe streets, and a strong defense are actually the cornerstones of a great nation. Just ask yourself, are you better off now than you were 3 years ago? There's no doubt we're at a crossroads, and it doesn't have to be this way. We all feel it. But here's the good news. We, the people, are still in the driver's seat. We get to decide whether our future will grow brighter or whether we'll settle for an America in decline. Well, I know which choice our children deserve, and I know the choice the Republican Party is fighting for. We are the party of hard-working parents and families, and we want to give you and your children the opportunities to thrive. And we want families to grow. It's why we strongly support continued nationwide access to in vitro fertilization. We want to help loving moms and dads bring precious life into this world. Wesley and I believe there is no greater blessing in life than our children. And that's why tonight I want to make a direct appeal to the parents out there, and in particular to my fellow moms, many of whom I know will be up tossing and turning at 2 a.m., wondering how you're going to be in three places at once and then somehow still get dinner on the table. First of all, we see you, we hear you, and we stand with you. I know you're frustrated. I know you're probably disgusted by most of what you see going on in Washington, and I'll be really honest with you, you're not wrong for feeling that way. Look, I get it. The task in front of us isn't an easy one, but I can promise you one thing. It is worth it. So I am asking you, for the sake of your kids and your grandkids, get into the arena. Every generation has been called to do hard things. American greatness rests in the fact that we always answer that call. It's who we are. Never forget, we are steeped in the blood of patriots who overthrew the most powerful empire in the world. We walk in the footsteps of pioneers who tamed the wild. We now carry forward the same flame of freedom as the liberators of an oppressed Europe. We continue to draw courage from those who bent the moral arc of the universe. And when we gaze upon the heavens, never forget that our DNA contains the same ingenuity that put man on the moon. America has been tested before, and every single time, we've emerged unbowed and unbroken. Our history has been written with the grit of men and women who got knocked down. But we know their stories because they did not stay down. We are here because they stood back up. So now it's our turn, our moment to stand up and prove ourselves worthy of protecting the American dream. Together, we can reawaken the heroic spirit of a great nation. Because America, we don't just have a rendezvous with destiny. We take destiny's hand and we lead it. Our future starts around kitchen tables just like this, with moms and dads just like you. And you are why I believe, with every fiber of my being, that despite the current state of our union, our best days are still ahead. May God bless you, and may God continue to bless these United States of America.
Okay, so we heard from Katie Britt out of Alabama, and pretty pretty interesting little speech from her. It was interesting choice of scenery, right, around the kitchen table. And she explained that, and she wanted to talk about some kitchen table issues, which everyday Americans really do care about. And so I think she kind of hit the nail on the head. She came out swinging, getting right at the border issues and the violence against women surrounding that. I mean, she just took that head on. And so I think that sat everybody up, right, in the chairs. We're all listening at that point. Now, I'm just looking at you guys. You guys are a tough crowd. So her name has been, I've heard it sort of in passing, potentially, you know, just on the VP list. And she's kind of the person you haven't heard about a lot. But I'm sure Donald Trump was watching that tonight, and I'm sure he was grading the performance. I think he'd give her an A+. Look, this is not easy. It's not, you're like, you're on national television all of a sudden. You've got you get the camera on you, you get the teleprompter. I hate teleprompters. I'm good at reading them, by the way, but I hate them, and I don't use them anymore at all. In fact, there's no way I possibly could, because I have so much I want and need to say. We have so much to talk about. There's no way that I could actually even read off a teleprompter. But throughout my career, I mean, you read a teleprompter. That's what you do, right? Until you go to the interview, and then you can kind of shake it up a bit. So she's reading off a teleprompter. It's not what she does for a living. And she's there in a small room, and there's no live audience, right? There's no one to, like, play to. She's not even like, you know, here, at least I have you guys. We're all talking to each other, right? So the complaints I'm hearing, oh, you know, it felt like it was staged or canned. This is part of the problem, shall we say, with the changes that are happening in media. What I would have loved, I mean, like, wouldn't it have been great if she'd walked around a little bit, if she, I don't know, just was able to kind of use her hands at one point. I actually liked that moment just to make it feel a little bit more real. But the problem is you get however many minutes and you got to get it in and you got a scripted speech and that's that. All that said, I thought she did a great job. I mean, certainly better than anyone else I've seen recently, right? I mean, again, it's a hard gig and, you know, no one's a television anchor. No one is a actor. So having to try and emote like that is tricky. Like if Trump were to do it, I don't think he doesn't love teleprompters. Let's be honest. I mean, he'll read from them, but still, it's not when he's at his best. Like he's at his best. He's out in a crowd. I'd like to actually see her like that. I'd love to see her at one of those rallies and see how she works with the crowd. See her off script, because I'll tell you this: she certainly hit everything. But anybody can write that for you. So again, like let's watch her. Let's watch her. She's an up and comer, and hey, we need them, ladies and gentlemen. We need them, and you know what? We do need moms. All right, I'm a mom. I get it. No, I don't get it, because to me, I look at it and say, okay, moms are the CFOs of their families, and they want to protect their kids, and so you would, as a result of some of these things, that they actually want policies that were very pro-capitalist, sort of anti-crime, more law and order, and yet that's not actually what we see. So I may not be like every other woman. I preface this when I say that, but we do need to bring in more moms. They're an important demographic, and I think she could be a big part of that. So she could be a real help for Donald Trump. It's been quite a night. We heard from the president. I'm calling this the state of disaster. Right? It's not a state of union, it's a state of disaster. He talked a little bit about unity. We're hardly unified, and that's in part him. I mean, how many times have we heard him say the negative things that he has said about conservatives? He talked about wanting a pathway to citizenship. I mean, come on. Like, at a time when we're dealing with all of this violence and this onslaught that we can't manage economically speaking, on the migrant, undocumented migrant path. He talks about the economy as though we've done a good job with it. That is all flat out wrong. And he wants more money for Ukraine. So I think it was a tough sell for America. And I think Americans are smart and they know what they're paying for a dozen eggs, $7.99 in my neck of the woods. And as a result of that, he's going to have a hard time. That's why every single poll shows you over and over and over again, Joe Biden is losing. to Donald Trump. But the Democrats can't have that. So this is a tough time. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you do that for me. Also, you can communicate with me on email. I think one of my team members from 76 Research was on tonight. That's my brand new passion. It is a research project. It is a newsletter for all of you to help you think about investing, long-term investing ideas, et cetera. We have three different model portfolios. You can get the free newsletter, at least sign up for that. There's the 76 report, the model portfolios, because you know what? No one else is taking care of you. Uncle Joe is not going to be taking care of you. Uncle Sam's not going to be taking care of you. You need to actually think this stuff through for yourself. So there's a lot of really good information there. Go to the website, 76research.com. It's all free. What you see there on the website, you can get our free guide to independent investing. The whole idea here is to be an independent thinker, to not let the mainstream media influence you, the Wall Street banks influence you, but for you to understand what's really at stake. And I cut through it. My colleague, my co-founder, Rob Horton, he spent 25 years as a fund manager on Wall Street. He cuts through it as well. Like, we both know what mainstream media is doing, what Wall Street's doing, and our goal is just, well, to help you think about what you're doing. So go check out 76research.com. Thank you for being here. Don't forget to subscribe, and we will talk again tomorrow. Have a great night.